Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got some great stories here tonight, today, whenever you're watching this. Running your Apple software on an Xbox 360.
How is that possible?
There's an app for that.
Let's see. We got a deep analysis of what changed in the base class library with pictures.
And inside the sausage factory of building Visual Studio.
Yes. So, but first, our top story.
Bing.
What's Bing?
Bing is our new search engine, Bing.com, which is we're still trying to figure out exactly what this means. So we might have a lot of questions, just like you do. Does this replace all the live search, all the live messenger? Does it become Bing Messenger and everything else? But the cool thing is Bing.com. You can make a verb out of it. So
Bing it.
Yeah, I'm gonna Bing it. Yep, exactly. Where you can't really do that with. What am I? I'm gonna live it.
Windows
I'm gonna live,
live
it.
Search.
Yeah, live it, search. Yeah, it doesn't really work. But the interesting thing about this is that Bing has been running internally at Microsoft. Anytime I would go to live.com from the corporate network and I would search for something, it would redirect to a site called Kumo, which is effectively the same thing as Bing. So they've rebranded Kumo as Bing. So I've noticed a lot of nice things. You were talking about getting your hockey scores.
Yeah, so this is one of the cool things. If you typed in a team name, especially during the playoffs for, say, hockey, you could actually see everything that was going on with that team. So, like, it would give you the current rankings in their playoffs, what the series is tied, when the next game is, and everything from, say, like, last game. So it was pretty great for just sort of instant metadata. We know you're searching on a sports team.
Right.
This is happening at this particular time. This is the quick box that gives you the summary of what's going on.
Right. And I've noticed that, too. In fact, I blogged about that a few years ago when Live implemented that whenever I searched for University of Florida Gators, and they would pop up with a box score for the game and all these team stats and stuff like that. Google, to this day, as far as I know, still doesn't have that, although I don't use Google every day, so maybe it does. But I really like the approach that the Live team is taking here, the Bing team is taking here with respect to doing exactly that, putting metadata up, things like that.
So it's kind of interesting that they change all redirects to live.com to actually to use Bing.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people inside Microsoft that use Google.com.
Couple.
It kind of be funny to do a Pepsi challenge. Take the Google skin, show the Bing results, and see if anybody even notices
the
difference.
We've secretly replaced his Maxwell House coffee with,
It's Bing? What? That'd be awesome.
So if you want to learn more about Bing, there's discoverbing.com.
And this is why we don't work on the corporate internal networks. They'd never let us.
Yeah, seriously.
We secretly replaced. So this is a new website, and it goes through, there's some product videos that go through. Stephen White, who has been on Channel 8, Channel 10, Channel 9 with Max Zuckerman, and they have a bunch of videos on here as well. So if you want to hear kind of what the team is, and one in particular is actually how they made the Bing brand and the branding guy that goes through what's in the name.
Okay, nice. And another big announcement this week, so the Zune HD, which has been rumored for a while now. I saw this a couple months ago on Twitter, but of course Microsoft was not commenting, and you and I, being right below interns, weren't really able to say anything. But it looks like it's real. It looks like a lot like iTouch, it's got the Zune software on there. And another thing that that I saw this week is that all the Zune Marketplace content is actually coming to Xbox Live as well. And so it's really nice that they're leveraging all those assets. And one of the neat things about this, I think, is that it's going to support HD radio and HD video out. But I think you need a special dock station for that.
Correct.
And then, of course, wireless. The other thing they said is a web browser. So somehow it's going to be able to go on to ad hoc networks, I guess.
Yeah, so people are talking about, like, wow, I hope it's a full version of IE as opposed to the mobile one, which doesn't render pages that great. So we don't know. And in terms of developers, why we'd care, Clint Rutkus and I emailed the Zune team to see if it's going to be programmable. So they talked about their marketplace today. The Zune client isn't programmable. There's some ways you can get around that. And Zune is only programmable for XNA games,
which you can still do a lot with, but it is limited. Like, you can't access like videos off the Zune, for example.
There's a lot you could imagine for general purpose applications, much like iPod Touch.
Right.
And APIs for say touch and multi-touch.
Right.
So
be
able to do
it
things like
multi-touch,
gesture programming. coming. Is it going to be XNA? Is it going to be something else?
Yep.
And then if you can see in the screenshot, there's a thing called the marketplace. So will that be general purpose applications or not? A lot of questions. If we're able to say anything, we will find out. And of course, we'll have some cool samples on Coding for Fun.
And it's coming in June, I believe.
I don't know.
June.
No, they
rhyme,
no.
So that seems like it
no.
makes sense.
No.
No, I think so.
No.
Later than that?
Hell yeah.
Okay.
The last I heard was not anytime soon.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I think
maybe,
actually that's
maybe
right.
It's
they
holiday
said holiday
season?
Season. That's right.
Holiday
I'm
season.
Getting my different things.
Yeah,
confused,
no. I mean,
so.
just change their calendar. I'm sure the devs are watching
well,
this.
Now,
going, now we have to ship.
Yeah, exactly.
In 4 days,
we will ship it soon. So what is this? Independent tree map of .NET Framework 4.0 Beta 1. So Beta 1's out.
Yes.
And people are starting to really take a look around. This is pretty feature-rich beta, meaning that you know most of what will ship in the final product is there. Not everything, but most of the bits are there, and anything that changes between now and, for example, the next beta would be what they call a design change request, meaning we've received a lot of feedback, we found that we need to change a feature, as opposed to we need to implement brand new features and things like that.
DCR.
A DCR is a design change request, exactly. So this is using IndePen's tree map feature to run that against the .NET Framework 4 and compare that to, what is this, against the .NET Framework 3.5?
Yeah, the 3.5 SP1. So Patrick Smakia did a post, and basically what he does is use IndePen, a tool that he built,
mm-hmm.
And it's a for purchase, although there's an academic license. And what it does is it gives you the differences between code. So this is a look at, you can see the picture here. Blue is additions, and I think the other boxes are changes. So you can see sort of a lot. And this is a zoomed in view of just MS Core Lib, but he has a massive library, massive view of the whole framework.
I didn't realize this was just MS Core Lib. Okay, so there's a lot more to look at here.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. This is just zoomed into one thing, and you can because it is a tree map, you can zoom in and zoom out and actually mm-hmm. get namespace level zoom in. So if I just want to see system.web.security.
Gotcha. You know, so I'm guessing that the blue stuff isn't brand new, but it just probably changes because like String Builder here is full of blue. So
I thought blue was additions, but we can verify.
Okay. And are those IL level changes or API level changes, or that's more questions to find out.
Yeah, so and one of the cool things that IndePend has is something called code query language.
So it's a new feature in IndePend.
It's not new, but it is it is a feature that I personally haven't played with.
Okay.
So but basically what code query language is allows you to send query messages the same way you'd query a database
mm-hmm.
on your code. So you can say, in this case, it's select types where was added and is public.
Okay.
So this will give me all data types in my code base that were added and that are public.
So again,
the
look at the difference
types.
Between Framework 4 and Framework 3.5, SP1.
Yeah, these are new public types.
And so drum roll, please. We have the total number of new types is 1,560, which
yes.
represents 693,000-ish IL instructions.
Yeah, so but you got to realize that 690,000 IL instructions is just the presentation framework.
Oh, right.
So it's even larger than, yeah, so it's crazy.
Gotcha.
But you got to break down.
So you're really getting your money's worth with this. Yeah,
yes.
Definitely.
This is definitely cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, and there's a bunch of stuff that it does to see circular dependencies, yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. So
and
what's that?
Cool stuff.
So what's that really mean, though? Here's another blog post that the BCL team did. Of course, Charles did an interview we talked about last week
mm-hmm.
talking to the BCL team. And this is a blog post that rolls up all their new Beta 1 features. So we've got code contracts, of course, we've talked about a lot on the show. Parallel extensions, we've talked about. Big integer, I didn't know this was coming.
Yeah, so this is one of those things that Java's had for calculating numbers. Sometimes you need really, really large
mm-hmm.
numbers. We actually, it turns out, bought a library that implemented this to, you know, whatever nth degree.
Right.
I'm assuming this is the financial crisis. You need big integer data
nice.
Types to be able to do. So that's a new data type. Some other stuff is processing for file system, where they did performance improvements to not load everything right away, to implement things like IEnumerable to make it easier for link. things like that people have already talked about that people consider more C sharp features, which are like the co and contra variants, but there's BCL things like in and out for those two.
Okay.
Just a lot of different stuff, new data types, etc.
Nice. So good roll up post there. And one of my favorite videos actually came out
this
week.
Inside the Sausage Factory.
Yeah, this is right. So so Beth Massey does great videos on Channel 9, and so I always try to watch all of her videos. This past week, she interviewed Matthew Gertz. And so Matthew Gertz is kind of the guy in charge of our build and release management lab. So I get mails from Matt every day saying, hey, this daily build of Team Suite looks great. It's good. It's, you know, you can install it on your machine to test it out. This build of TFS is blocked because we have this particular issue. So basically his team is the team that builds Visual Studio every night and then runs all these BVTs, build verification tests, which are a series of automated tests that you can run against the builds and tell you whether or not it should install, whether or not certain Pry/0 features are going to work in them, and then communicates to the rest of the division to say, hey, this build's worth your time to try out, and this build, you know, skip it and wait for the next one. And then they have things that are called bless builds. So anyway, don't have to take my word for it. Watch the video. He basically takes you through what is it like to actually run that release process, how do all the various teams, he gets into branching, emerging strategy, how do all the various teams roll their changes up into main.
That is one of the things where it's just crazy because all these different teams have different builds and different branches, and then they all roll back into main at some point, and then their new features of everybody else's branches need to roll back into their private branch.
Forward integrations, reverse integrations.
RIFI, which blows my mind because RI is forward, FI is, anyway.
So anyway, check it out. Very, watch the video, very good video. Yeah, definitely. So people are always asking, how does Microsoft build software? I think this is a great video that Beth did. So nice job.
Yes. Yeah. Love it. Now, one of the things is T4. I guess this is to celebrate Christian Bale. we've talked about T4 before. This is a free editor that allows you, gives you a visual, it's a Visual Studio plugin that allows you to auto-generate code, which is what T4 does using Visual Studio. So what it can do is you can either do a UML model, you can suck it in from a database, which is some scenarios for things like MVC, where I'm telling it to spit out code based on, I want my customers table and then have everything be fields on a website, and make, you know, state a drop down based on a lookup table, you know, the typical things that you do, or an XML file. And the model stuff is cool because they actually have some nice modeling tools, so you can model how you want things to do and it'll actually do the code spit for you.
Okay.
So point of the story is it's free, it's available now, and
it works with 2008 or 2010.
Yeah, so definitely cool stuff.
Nice. So Wintellect Power Live Framework Library. So this is a library that Wintellect built after playing around with building applications for Live Mesh. And so they went through the process of building applications for Live Mesh. They said, hey, a couple places where we might be able to cut some corners, build some abstract libraries, make it easier for other people to build Live Mesh applications. And oh, by the way, let's make it available for everybody. So
yeah, so this is Jeffrey Richter blogging about this. I think the cool part is he, one, has access to the raw stuff, so if you really need just raw access to the Live Mesh data, the XML over the wire, you can do that. It's built to be easily parallelizable. I think it's using their power threading library, so I can send, you know, 10 requests and not, say, have to manually do it. It's just built in that I'm going to be requesting multiple things, like all files for three users on Mesh or something.
Right.
It ships with a console application that goes through like specific examples, writing to Mesh, sending an invite, et cetera, et cetera. And I think one of the other cool things is they're building a Mesh app, which is, I think it's like Cloud Share, Clipboard Share, I forget the exact name, but it's going to be like a sample app so that you can easily share things on your clipboard within, say, like a set of friends, for example.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
So it's like a live clipboard service.
So you and I are building the show, and I find something. I say, hey, check your clipboard. I just found an image that you should add to the deck, something like that.
Yeah,
that's
and I
cool.
say, lol, that's really indecent. I really wish you hadn't sent that to me on a corporate network. Lol,
exactly.
Here's my picture back.
Nice. actually, I love Live Mesh. I use it all the time. There are a couple areas that I would love to write some apps for. Like, one thing would be to be able to query the status and say, is my local folder actually synced? because there's not really a good way to do that. It's kind of does it kind of syncs on its own time, and when it has spare bandwidth or spare, I don't know what's going on exactly. So it would be great to be able to run like a CRC check against my folder, against the cloud folder, and against your folder to say, okay, who's in date or who's up to date? Can we disconnect from the network now? Whatever.
I think you could very easily do that.
Yeah, definitely. So lots of potential
when are you gonna...
there. Right after this.
Okay.
Yeah, before the show uploads tomorrow. So speaking of feature lists, so WPF4.
Yeah, this is Jaime Rodriguez going through. There's a number of things that they talked about in Windows Presentation Foundation for features. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them are Windows 7 related. Some of them are changing some of the way they do graphics and drawing. Some of them are changing the way they handle text.
Right.
And I know people have been talking about the Visual Studio 2010 features in text not looking crisp, and there's a number of things that they're doing around that. So the key is they did a number of announcements, but not all those features are in beta 1, or they're partially implemented. So multi-touch, for example, isn't fully implemented in beta 1. There are some parts of it, but there's going to be even more parts coming in beta 2. Now, there are some things that actually ended up getting cut for WPF4, like deep zoom. The point is, and Jaime calls this out and says, you know, this is a tentative list. You know, things could happen, features could cut, don't swear by this. But here's kind of questions we've been getting asked when features are coming either in beta 1, beta 2, and what features are within each of those milestones.
Yeah, I love the transparency. Definitely good thing to make people aware of. Now, the Windows 7 features you talked about, those are light up features, meaning that if you're running on XP then or Vista, then the feature will still work, but it looks even better in Windows 7. Is that the idea?
I mean, you could say that for multi-touch, sure.
Okay, yeah, I guess multi-touch is a bad example, yeah. But so these are things, but basically when you say Windows 7 features, that means you have to have Windows 7 in order to take advantage of that.
Yeah, for some of them it's specific to Windows 7 needs, right? So like taskbar.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so like some of the things that you can do for taskbar, and we've talked about taskbar, jump list, all that stuff before.
Gotcha.
Rather than using some of the API code pack examples that we talked about last show, you can actually just use this natively in WPF4.
Gotcha. Okay. So Mark Rusinovich, this is another one of those like CSI coding style examples here.
Yeah.
So what's the background story here?
Okay, so Mark did a keynote for TechEd. And they were using a stock trader, XE, mm-hmm. and he, I think, Authenticode code signed the app, right? So he mails it over to Scott, to a colleague. He goes to, the colleague goes to run it and takes, like, I don't know, 60, 90 seconds to load when it loaded right away before.
So it's
like,
because of the signing, it's introduced this delay.
Right, and Mark's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So Mark built SysTernals, mm-hmm. as everybody knows the company. One of the tools they have is Process Monitor. Mm-hmm. So he jumps using Process Monitor, goes into the process, and he goes step by step how he actually did it. But you go into that XE, you actually see what it's calling, and then you can actually see the it was calling an authentication service within the framework, which I guess was making a web call to see if something had expired. Mm. And since he didn't need that, he basically added an app.config, set something to false, which mm-hmm. says, you know, don't go on the web, and boom, it's loaded. And, you know, his colleague, like, said, I don't know how you figured out what was going on with a compiled XE, because this is not like he's debugging the source code. And he was like, oh, no, I got process monitor.
Yeah, this is Mark Rusinovich we're talking about. You should just assume.
He is a god.
But the moral of the story is, if you want to know how to debug an application real-time using process monitor, take a look at this example. It'll give you a nice way to start out.
Yeah, it was kind of fascinating to me to be able to see that level of detailed calls on what's going in terms of even measuring the time, because that's really what he did, was measure these apps, and it's like, that's adding up to that time.
Right, exactly. So time for picks of the week. So this is an email, or actually a blog post that my brother pointed me to this week. He got engaged, by the way. Congratulations, Danny and Amanda.
Yeah, very cool.
Got to throw that out there. And
his name, Danny. I don't want to say he stole it from me, but go on.
So the guy that runs gamesbyemail.com, and I don't remember his name right now, but gamesbyemail.com is kind of like if you and I wanted to play Risk over email.
And we're both in prison. Okay.
Exactly. then we could play Risk. I mean, who wants to set up the board at their house, whatever? Let's just play over email, right? And the idea is that their service, gamesbyemail.com, will take care of all the state management, so it's like a server-side game.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah, that's a long story. I don't have time for that. But one of the things that they do is they actually roll the dice for you. And so they have these math libraries that go through and generate the dice rolls and everything. And they got.
See, I thought they had a physical device.
Well,
not yet.
So that's what he had in the past. And then people would complain that all the dice rolls were not random enough.
It's pseudo random numbers.
Yeah, and he says that some people like spent more time like debunking his random dice generator than they did like on their college dissertations. You know,
sure,
like they would just rip him apart. So he finally had enough. He's like, all right, I'm going to actually roll dice. And so he goes out and he builds this dice rolling machine. And his expectation was that if he did it, you know, really well, then he might be able to generate like 200,000 dice rolls in a day. Well, he totally outdid himself. I think he's up to like 1 to 2 million dice rolls in a day. So it's literally this kind of treadmill that picks up these dice and then drops them down a chamber and then puts them into, you know, a little row and then photographs them and then uses those dice combinations to then feed gamesbyemail.com. So you can be rest assured that there's actually a dice roll happening when you play via his service. So I think it's awesome. Pretty ingenious.
I think it's brilliant. Like, completely useless, but brilliant.
What do you mean completely useless? Like,
to build hardware to do two random numbers?
You have beat me the last three Risk games, and I'm pretty sure you figured out the algorithm. So.
Well, look, man, if you're not going to fight for Eastern Australia...
Eastern Australia, come
on. Kazakhstan is a land...
Eastern Europe's where it's at.
Oh, please.
So what's your pick of the week?
Virtue, which is an Apple II emulator. So mm-hmm. I'm a huge Apple IIe guy. I cut my teeth on programming basic applications for Apple IIe. This is pretty awesome. This is Sean Fawcett.
Sean Fawcett.
From New Zealand. And he built an emulator that runs both in WPF, Silverlight, and on the Xbox 360.
So you can play your Apple games on an Xbox 360.
Tell me that isn't crazy.
That's really cool.
He said he just had this moment where he actually was using an Xbox 360 controller to play these Apple IIe games.
That's
awesome.
And
was like, this is awesome. Now, I haven't had time to personally play this, but I think this is so, so awesome.
Yeah, and you guys exchanged some mails, and he talked about how the process that he went through and
built
this.
Yeah, he did this all in his spare time, and hopefully we're trying to get him to write a Coding for Fun article on how he actually built it.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
Yeah, so this is pretty amazing. Now, it is an open source project on CodePlex. It's not, since it's an early build, doesn't have all the features, but it does do things like load ROMs and mm-hmm. games and stuff like that. So if you're an Apple IIe fanboy, then definitely check this out.
Heck yeah. I actually, my family was too poor. We couldn't afford an Apple IIe, so we got this Apple IIe compatible called a Franklin 2000. And so I go buy these games, and I get halfway through them, and like some instruction set that it needed like wouldn't be implemented, and I'd like have to go take the game back or something. It was just, yeah.
This explains so much about your future relationships.
Yeah. And that's this week for the show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks. Right.